I'm so awfully ashamed, Doctor.
It's all right.
I've always been like this. Always. And I used to think that everybody was like this. That they would just naturally wake up and be someplace else or a whole lot older or wearing another dress. Once I woke up and I was 2 years older.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 23 of the 13 o'clock podcast.
23 already.
Almost, yep. 6 months.
Almost.
We should probably do something special, like when we get to a year.
Okay, we can do that.
I don't know what.
We'll work something out.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. It'll be kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see. What do we got to do first? First thing we want to do, we want to give a shout out to Project Entertainment Network again.
Mm-hmm.
And encourage everyone to go and give to their Patreon.
Yeah, you get free stuff.
You get buttons, you get, you know, stickers, yeah. Postcards,
and
beer koozies.
Beer koozies. And finally got around to getting some of our own shirts.
Yeah, because remember all those shirts that I'm always trying to make you guys buy at the end? Okay, so I designed them, and we have not seen them on actual shirts yet.
No, but I finally got a Vril Maiden shirt.
The Vril Maiden shirt.
It hasn't arrived yet. It takes a long time for the elves to make them. How long ago was that we placed that order?
It wasn't that long ago.
About a week?
Yeah, it was something like a week ago.
Okay.
So we'll let you know how they look on the actual shirt.
Maybe we'll take some pictures of them.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. We'll put them up on the website.
I have high hopes for them, though. The quality should be real good.
They better be.
Yeah.
They were expensive enough.
I like the design.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, with that out of the way, we are now getting to our topic.
Sybil.
Yes.
Yeah, Sybil.
And this was actually recommended by a listener. And it's funny because when it was recommended, we had just been talking about the Sybil case like a couple of days before. And I was like, duh, why didn't I think of doing a show on
that? Well, there's a new movie out by M. Night. What's his name?
Shyamalama Ding Dong?
Shyamalama Ding Dong. Shyamalan is his name, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I always call him Shyamalama Ding Dong.
It's easier to remember.
Affectionately.
Yeah, it's easier to remember. And that one seems to be about multiple personality disorder, but you never know. There might be a twist.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
There's going to be the M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong twist.
Yeah.
Like he does.
Trademark.
Although, man, I really liked, what was that one? Unbreakable. I loved Unbreakable.
I know you did.
Yeah, I
liked
that one.
I liked The Sixth Sense, and that was about it.
All right. But we're back to Sybil, and I can remember Sybil back when I was a kid, my babysitter talking about Sybil. I was about 7. She was probably about 13, 14, you know? And she'd be talking to her friends, and they were scared of this. This was almost kind of like a made-for-TV horror movie back in the day. You know, they didn't really know much about multiple personality disorder. But it was almost like on par with, for the time, it was like on par with The Exorcist and The Omen and, you know.
Yeah.
Amityville Horror.
Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's Baby.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it had a lot of cultural impact.
And actually, now that you mention it, this never occurred to me before.
Yeah.
But all of those movies that came out like in the late 60s, early 70s about like demon possession and stuff like that, this is kind of like the psychiatric equivalent of that.
Right, yeah. Demon possession and multiple personality have a lot in common.
They do. And that's actually, that never occurred to me until you said that. And I was like, wow, maybe that's why that was such, for some reason, whatever was going on in the culture at the time, possession was like a big thing.
Right.
And like you're not who you think you are. There's other people inside of you and stuff like that.
There are a lot of parallels.
Yeah, which is kind of a frightening thought. So I can see there was something culturally going on at the time.
I can remember all the stuff about the abuse, you know, hold your water and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I can remember the girls, you know, the older women that surrounded me.
All your hot babysitters.
All my hot 13 or 14 year old babysitters when I was like 7.
He was 7. It's not a pedophile.
I was 7. Yeah.
It's okay.
They were older women.
Older women.
And my favorite one was Kim and little Kimmy, and she looked just like Princess Leia.
Oh.
She looked just like Princess Leia.
That was his earliest crush. It's his first love.
I got pictures of her. My mom took pictures of all of us at one time. I remember I came across them a few years back. And she did. Really? She looked just like Princess Leia.
That's hilarious.
But what was funny is that she didn't look like an older woman when I saw her. Looked like a little kid.
Yeah, well, yeah, she was a little kid.
I was like, of course she was.
She was 13. You're like, ooh, now I feel weird.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. So, so it's kind of cool that it's like that someone suggested this because Sybil, The book came out in 1973 when I was one.
Yeah, this is a convoluted case. We have to like keep this nailed down and structured. So what we're going to talk about is the book, the movie, and then the actual case. Is that the best way to keep it organized?
Yeah, because you know how we do. We kind of go off on tangents. Yeah, and that's fun. I like doing that. But it's like
real muddy real quick.
But otherwise, you know? I'll just be all over the place, right. And then I'll get stressed out and have to turn it off. So because I get overwhelmed, I'm like, what was I talking about? I don't know. All my notes are open and shit.
Yeah.
But the book came out in 1973 when I was one. Now, I read it. God, I don't remember how old I was. I was probably a kid because I was like, I was all into that kind of shit when I was a kid. And I would just go to the library and I'd get all the adult books out that I wasn't supposed to be reading. And so this like fascinated me for a long time. Now, for those of you who are not as old as we are and, you know, don't remember like the huge cultural impact that this had in the 70s, the book actually sold, what, like 6 million copies?
Damn.
Like before that one, and that was before the TV movie was made.
Right.
And I'm sure it sold many more after that. So, you know, it made quite a bit of money. And the TV movie came out, was shown in 1976, and it had Sally Field in it. And Joanne Woodward played the doctor. And that was, like, huge. Like, everybody fucking saw that. Mm-hmm. Everybody saw that, and everybody was talking about it. And actually, I think Sally Field won an Emmy for that, if I'm not mistaken. But the gist of the story is, and Sybil is based on a real person, obviously, but that was not her name. It was a pseudonym, and I'll get into that later, like that later they found out who the real person was. The book was written by Flora Rieder Schreiber. She was a journalist, and she collaborated with the doctor, Dr. Cornelia Wilbur, that was her real name, and with the patient, Sybil.
Yeah.
Sybil Isabel Dorset was the name they gave her for the book, but that was not her name. Now, initially, here was what happened in the book and also to an extent in the TV movie. And they remade the TV movie, too, in 2007 with Jessica Lange as a doctor. And it was actually pretty good. I found it on YouTube yesterday, illegally.
Yeah.
So so if you want to watch it, it's on there still.
Yeah, the original's probably impossible to find, huh?
I found clips of it. I couldn't find the whole thing.
Right.
So
it's like trying to find Salem's Lot.
Yeah,
we buy that one.
Yeah, we tried to find that. And I even checked Netflix and it's DVD only. And I was like, oh my God, that.
Yeah, we recommend Salem's Lot for a made for TV movie. That was an awesome movie. It was better than I remembered it.
It was a lot better than I
remembered. Yeah, I like Salem's Lot.
Yeah, we were just talking about that yesterday. Just tangent, you know.
Yeah, another tangent.
That's all right. That's what makes it fun.
Okay, so
what happened here? This girl, Sybil, she was a college student at the time. And she initially sought therapy because she was having social anxiety, emotional breakdowns. She had been in college for 2 years and she was actually doing fine before that. But evidently she started having all these emotional problems. And most significantly, she complained that she was having episodes of missing time.
Okay.
She was saying, you know, sometimes I'll wake up and it's 5 days later and I don't know what I've been doing for the past five
days. And no
days.
UFOs reported, no alien abduction, none of that, right?
None of this Betty and Barney Hill shit. No, okay. It's like, no, we got anal probed and all. Well,
just check.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No UFOs. Although I'm surprised that wasn't, you know, suggested by anybody.
Next thing you know, somebody will jump on with a book. Oh yeah. It was actually all just alien abduction.
Hey, maybe I should write that. Oh, shit. Now I just blew it. Okay. I didn't say that. Okay. So anyway, so she's having episodes of missing time. She's saying, I'm in my apartment and I look in the closet and there's dresses in there that are not my style that I don't remember buying.
Right.
You know, people are coming up and talking to me like they know me. I don't know who they are. And all this other kind of stuff, which was obviously very upsetting for her, which as it would be. Now, initially, reportedly, like I said, there's reports, there's all kind of shit about this on the web. If you want to look it up, it's kind of like a he said, she said.
Yes, this is a very convoluted
case. Kind of thing. It's like there's all kind of controversy about the diagnosis and all this other kind of stuff. So I'm just kind of going by the general consensus of reports. Now, at first, Dr. Wilbur thought that she might have schizophrenia.
Right.
Which was not terribly weird because her mother reportedly had schizophrenia. And, you know, it tends to run in families. So she consulted with another doctor named Dr. Herbert Spiegel, and Spiegel put her under hypnosis and stuff like that. Now, as Dr. Wilbur worked with Sybil. Evidently, it started to come to light that Sybil had dissociated and had 16 different personalities that weren't terribly aware of each other, and that Sybil, the main personality, was not aware of at all. So
now when you say main personality, you're talking about like supposedly her normal.
Her normal personality. Okay, gotcha. You know, it's kind of hard to sort out because it's like if you have that many personalities, which one is the real you and which one is. But generally they're saying, you know, Sybil Isabel Dorset, her pseudonym, that was her given name and that was her main personality.
Okay.
Now apparently this personality went and sought treatment, but she did not remember all these other personalities. Apparently they were doing shit without her knowledge.
Okay.
But she didn't, like I said, she didn't know that that's all she knew was I woke up and it was 5 days later. I woke up and I was in another city and I didn't know how I got there. Shit like that.
Okay.
So now there is some controversy over whether Dr. Wilbur, it says that she hypnotized her, but I don't know if that's the case. However, she did give her sodium pentothal.
Right.
Which, as we mentioned on our show on The Devil's Breath, is generally used as kind of a truth serum type of thing. And she was, you know, apparently talking to her when she was under the influence of sodium pentothal.
Okay.
And as that started to happen, she began to manifest all these different personalities. Now, the main personality and the one who knew about all the other ones was named Victoria, and she was French. She said she had been born in Paris, that she had loving middle-class parents, and so forth. She spoke with a French accent. She could speak some rudimentary French, evidently. And she was kind of like the boss personality.
Okay.
Like, she was very self-assured. She knew all of the other personalities, she knew their names and she knew what they were for. So apparently this was kind of like the regulating personality. Yeah. Now in the book,
it was the ringmaster.
The ringmaster, I guess you could say. Now in the original book, and I believe in the original 1976 movie, Vicky was only 12 years old. Now in the remake with Jessica Lange, she was 18. Mm-hmm. So she was kind of like a flirtatious French girl, and she was the one that would tell the doctor about what all the other personalities were up to. So, and she was the one that kind of took care of everything. But as their kind of psychotherapeutic relationship continued, Dr. Wilbur began to suspect that there had been some kind of very traumatic abuse in her childhood that had caused her to dissociate into all these other personalities.
This is where it gets good.
Yeah, because some of the personalities seem to remember things that Sybil herself did not remember.
Right.
Because evidently Sybil was saying, because the abuse, they think it came at the hands of her mother.
According to these personalities.
According to the personalities.
Right.
And apparently the mother had done all kinds of horrible things to Sybil when she was a little girl.
This is what I remember. This is what I remember.
Well, this was the most, I think this is what most people remember, like from the book and the movie, because it was really kind of sordid and out there.
Yeah.
Like all the stuff that her mother would do to her.
Right. Give us some examples.
Well, it was kind of a thing like, I remember specifically was the ice water enemas.
Yeah.
She would, the mother would tie Sybil's legs to a broomstick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, stick a tube up her butt and then like shoot ice water up her colon. So I'm like, ew. She would like tie her underneath the piano
while she played
really loud, and she would like not let her pee.
Hold your water.
Yeah, that was like kind of the famous.
That was a famous quote. Hold your water.
Famous quote. And the mom was just generally a shit. I mean, you know.
Speaking of, she would take a dump in people's bushes. She'd run around, you know, the mom
in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Evidently, the mom would run around in the middle of the night, peeking in people's windows with Sybil with her. And then she'd like pinch a loaf off into people's yards and everything. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
It was really bizarre.
And also, there were also like some other, now apparently there had been some.
Oh, I forgot about the lesbian orgies with teenage girls.
That's what I was just going to say. There was apparently some sexual abuse as well. Evidently the mother, she was actually called Hattie in the book and the movie, but her real name was Martha.
Okay.
She would rape Sybil with various household implements.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, lesbian orgies with teenage girls around the neighborhood that Sybil was apparently seeing.
Yeah.
I don't know why. And, you know, things of that nature. I mean, some of the stuff seemed, I was almost going to say reasonable. That's probably not the word I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, no.
Believable. Plausible.
Right.
Some of the stuff seemed a little off the rails.
Now, how old was Sybil supposedly when this was going on?
Well, see, now this was different ages because they kind of figured out that, like, all her personalities kind of corresponded with ages at which particularly horrible things happened to her.
Okay.
Like, one of the personalities, I believe its name was Ruthie, was a baby.
Okay.
And she was, like, pre-verbal.
Okay.
So whenever she went into that personality, you know, obviously the doctor couldn't really communicate with her because she would just, like, make baby noises. And, but some of them were, you know, 3 years old. I think one was six.
But when all this running around the neighborhood and the lesbian orgies, how old was Sybil supposed to be at that time? Does anybody know?
No.
It's too vague.
Yeah.
Okay. So she couldn't give times and dates or anything when this was happening in the book. Okay.
Right. Now, in the book and the original movie and in the remake, the doctor works with Sybil for about 11 years. They develop a very close friendship. And as it goes on, she is able to hypnotize Sybil and convince all of the personalities to progress in age to the same age as Sybil is, because most of them are younger.
Right.
And once she does that, you know, it takes several years, but eventually she's able to integrate all of the different personalities into, you know, one personality.
Now, in the book, more or less, how old is she when she's able to do this, integrate them all?
I think she was in her 30s at that point.
Okay.
Maybe 40s, actually, because I think she was, like, in her 30s when she first started.
If I remember correctly, she was born in, like, 1923.
Right?
So she was, you know, up there in age.
Yeah. Yeah, she wasn't, like, a kid.
Right, yeah.
But the thing is, here's where it gets kind of murky. Because many years later, when they finally found out who the real person was that Sybil was based on, there's a lot of controversy about how much of her story was true, if it was completely fraudulent, if it was simply exaggerated, if her symptoms were encouraged by the therapist,
right,
how much of the abuse was real. Because it kind of ties in, and I think we talked about this a little bit on episode 2 about the Satanic Panic. Because we talked about the whole repressed memory thing that got very, very big in the 80s.
Yeah.
Where a lot of therapists were, like, suggesting.
Right.
Like, satanic ritual abuse and other kinds of, like, really horrific kinds of abuse to their patients. And they don't know if a lot of it really happened or not. Or if it was just suggestible people being given these false memories.
Well, in the Satanic Panic show that we did, you know, we demonstrated that a lot of what was reported could not have happened.
Yeah, it was impossible.
You cannot flush a little kid down a toilet and then have that little kid arrive alive in an underground torture chamber.
Yeah.
And Chuck Norris was not beating that little kid.
Right.
There, okay.
That we know of.
and Satanists were not flying away in balloons.
Right.
You know, that was not happening.
Yeah. So obviously, and like I said, this is where it gets a little tricky because, yes, child abuse is a horrible problem. Yes, a lot of children are abused, some of them quite horrifically and grotesquely. But, you know, because of the Satanic Panic and what happened in that, in like the McMartin preschool case and stuff like that, where these kids were coming up with this shit that was just crazy, that was just impossible.
Right.
So now it's kind of swung in the way other direction, where it's like the crazier your abuse is, the more people are being like, fuck, nothing happened to you.
Right, yeah.
And I'm not sure that's the case here. Now, what I should say is that, you know, after Sybil was identified as Shirley Ardell Mason, that's her real name.
Mm-hmm.
She's dead now, but she was identified before she died as being Sybil. Now, her mother reportedly was schizophrenic.
Okay.
Neighbors have reported that she was weird.
Right.
That she did creep around at night, look in people's windows. Not so much about the pooping.
Okay.
But, you know, when the woman that lived across the street, I know. Okay. It's awful. It's awful. Yeah, yeah. The woman who lived across the street did say she would creep around at night and look in people's windows, which is kind of weird enough. And that she was kind of witch-like.
Right.
Not a real happy woman.
Right.
And other neighbors and a couple of Sybil's teachers, you know, have said that, you know, the parents were very strict. They were Seventh-day Adventists.
Right.
And, you know, they would hold her hand really tight, or they wouldn't let her do anything and stuff like that. Were they strict? Sure.
Right.
Were they abusive? Hard to say.
Right.
Might have been. Now, Sybil's father, you know, said no. He defended his wife.
Right.
But, you know, he would do that. So there's no way of knowing whether the worst of the abuses happened.
Okay.
However...
Yeah, there are no witnesses.
Yeah, there were no direct witnesses.
And they couldn't find any teenage girls that they that had been involved in these orgies or anything like that.
Right. So, you know, the thing is, Sybil was obviously an emotionally disturbed woman. She had problems.
Right.
Did the problems come from this, like, unbelievably baroque abuse? Can't really say.
Right.
Could have happened. I mean, none of the stuff she said was impossible. It was just probably pretty unlikely.
Right.
But she might have been abused, you know, just in a kind of run-of-the-mill, quote-unquote, kind of way, you know, that didn't involve lesbian orgies in the woods.
And holding your water and all that.
Yeah.
Well, that could happen.
That could happen. Yeah. So, anyway, so the real woman, Shirley Idell Mason, and she was born in 1923, and apparently quite brilliant. Okay. Reportedly IQ of 174, which is, you know, very high. Very talented artist. Mm-hmm. Very talented musician.
Okay.
Although later on, some of her personalities could play piano and some of them couldn't.
Okay.
And another thing that kind of came out later, and I think they went into this in the book and also in the movie a little bit, that most of her personalities could paint.
Mm-hmm.
But when you saw the pictures that she would do under the influence, they were kind of different styles.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Which was kind of a weird thing. But when the book and the movie came out and was such a big cultural phenomenon, it seemed like, now previously to the book coming out, there had only been between 75 and 200 cases of multiple personality disorder diagnosed in the world.
Right.
Now, after that came out in the ensuing decades...
Let me guess, they increased.
Yes. Yeah. Exponentially.
Okay.
And...
It became a fad.
Yeah.
All right.
And, you know, tellingly, the diagnoses only really increased in North America.
Right.
You know, which...
Where it was released.
Where it was released. So whether that was a case of therapists now saying, oh, now we recognize the symptoms of this disease so we can diagnose it more easily, or whether it was kind of a thing where we're just going to take this other, you know, mental disorder and kind of glom it onto this because it's faddish.
Right.
And I really don't think that that controversy has really been resolved to anyone's satisfaction, even to this day.
To me, it sounds a lot like the alien abduction thing, where you put somebody under hypnosis and they remember all this stuff that happened to them that probably didn't happen.
Yeah.
Although there are a few of the alien abduction cases that are kind of compelling. They're interesting. But it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. And like I said, it kind of reminds me of that whole false memory thing.
Of
the satanic panic. Like Michelle remembers that book and all that other kind of stuff.
70s and 80s. The 70s and 80s.
That was a very big thing. So it's kind of hard to tease apart.
Right.
Now, there have been accusations by different doctors that Cornelia Wilbur, the doctor, the therapist who was treating Sybil, either purposely or sort of accidentally suggested these personalities, multiple personality disorder, either in order to sell books.
Mm-hmm.
Or because she really thought that that's what was wrong with the woman.
Right.
You know, I don't want to impugn the woman's reputation. She's dead too. You know, she wasn't a quack by any stretch of the imagination. She won a lot of awards and accolades and stuff in her field. And, But there have been some accusations that she and Sybil and Flora Schreiber, who wrote the book, kind of collaborated and, you know, had this kind of plan.
There's a business plan.
A business plan that they were going to make like a cultural thing. We're going to have t-shirts. We're going to write a musical. Right. We're going to have a board game.
Yeah.
We're going to have that kind of stuff. So there is some evidence that they kind of wanted it to be multiple personality disorder because it was sexy.
Yeah. And we can get more into that in the second half of the show.
Yeah.
Because the more you look into this case, the more you find out that there was some... what's a good way to put it?
Shenanigans?
There were some shenanigans with this case.
It's not allegedly.
Alleged shenanigans.
Alleged shenanigans.
I think it's a mixture. I think the case is actually a mixture. We should probably take a break now.
Yeah, we're almost at the halfway point. Yeah,
and then we can get more into it, and then we can wrap this up, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting case, but there's a lot of stuff that was, you know, that was kind of in between the lines.
Yeah, it's a lot of gray area.
There's some gray areas.
There. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we will be back in just a minute.
I'm Captain Battlesley, and I'm one of them characters in the Kirkman Journals, Project Entertainment Network's pro wrestling podcast. Every Friday, Tokyo Tom Clark, Steve Mensa, and the Viking Superkick Pro Wrestling in the Hot Spot, featuring interviews with the up-and-coming indie superstars that are stable and shoots while it works. You can only hear them on the Project Entertainment Network. Thank you very much. Remember the Alamo!
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. SubcultureCorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
The Necrocasticon, the podcast that blends horror and heavy metal properties with a common connection, brought to you by hosts Token Tom Clark, Max Axe, Smoking Walt Hades, and Azrael Mordecai. Featuring interviews and more with the stars of metal and horror. The Necrocasticon, Mondays on Project Entertainment Network.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Tenebrous Poisons. Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, and we're back.
Yeah.
So when we left, we were just talking about the kind of controversy about the diagnosis and, you know, what they may have stood to gain from making it multiple personality disorder. Now, I don't think anyone anywhere is saying that Sybil didn't have some type of mental disorder. She clearly did.
At least schizophrenia.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, reading about her, I sort of feel bad for her because I don't know if she was really, I'm not saying she wasn't a willing participant if this was kind of, you know, an exaggerated kind of thing to sell books, but the way she was, it almost seemed like she went along because she thought that's what the doctor wanted.
Right.
And that's what other doctors have said later, including Dr. Spiegel, who also... He didn't really treat her, but he saw her a bunch of times, and apparently he hypnotized her also. Now, Dr. Spiegel said that he did not think that Sybil had multiple personalities in the classic sense. He thought that what was happening was that she was, you know, maybe she had some repressed memories, maybe she had some abuse in her past, and she had had some kind of PTSD type of reaction where she was walling things off. But he thought what was happening was that the doctor, while Sybil was on sodium pentothal when she was under hypnosis, that the doctor was suggesting to her that these different memories or these different aspects of her personality were a separate person, and we're like giving them names.
Thereby creating
a separate personality when maybe there wasn't one there before. That was Dr. Spiegel's take on it.
Right.
He just thought that Sybil was probably an emotionally, you know, kind of emotionally unstable kind of person. And she was real suggestible.
Right.
He said it was very easy to hypnotize her. Which is common with people with these types of disorders. And that maybe she was kind of taking, like, for example, and I think they even mentioned this in the book, in the movie, that she had a child personality named Peggy that was sort of the one that took on all the anger, allegedly, at what her mother had done to her. Because the real Sybil apparently was not allowed to express her anger or her hatred toward her mother because of their religion, because of what have you.
Right.
So apparently it was all glommed off onto this Peggy personality.
Okay.
So what Dr. Spiegel would suggest was going on there, that maybe Sybil, the main personality, had all of this repressed anger, which was still her.
Right.
But that Dr. Wilbur was calling it Peggy.
Right. So in other words, as the therapy continued, more and more personalities would emerge.
Right.
And I think the records of the therapy demonstrated that, right? That some of these personalities didn't have names at first.
Yeah.
That's how I remember.
Most of them ended up having names. I think there was one of the ones to emerge later was called The Blonde. She didn't have a name. And I don't know if they put that in the movie, but that was in the book. But, and I think that was the personality that ended up becoming the dominant personality at the end when they were all quote unquote integrated
together. Right.
But, you know, like I said, this is so hard to tease apart because evidently Dr. Spiegel said he didn't think that Dr. Wilbur was doing this to harm Sybil or that he was doing it
on purpose,
that she was doing it on purpose.
Right.
He just thought that because Sybil was so suggestible and so eager to please, she wanted to make Dr. Wilbur happy.
Right.
You know, they were friends. They were together for such a long time. And so he thought that maybe she was just doing what she thought Dr. Wilbur wanted. Which is create more personalities. Okay. Now, the more, kind of cynical critics allege that Flora Schreiber, the woman who wrote the book, and Dr. Cornelia Wilbur were fully aware that Sybil did not really have multiple personality disorder, but that the publisher of the book that they had already worked out the contract with said, no, it's got to be about multiple personality disorder because it's kind of a sexy disorder. It's kind of coming up, you know,
we'll sell a lot of books.
And we'll sell a lot of books if it's that.
So there was something to gain financially.
Right.
By having her have, or at least claim to have, multiple personality disorder.
Yeah.
Because of the book.
Right.
Okay.
And muddying the waters is the fact that apparently Sybil had written a letter in which she said that she did not have multiple personality disorder and that she was kind of, she said that she knew something was wrong with her, but that she was essentially making it up. Because that's what she thought Dr. Wilbur wanted.
Right.
However, now I should
note. To counter that. Right.
I should note that this letter was put in the original book.
Okay.
Flora Schreiber did put it in the book.
Okay. So they didn't try to hide it?
No, they didn't try to hide it. They said Sybil did say that in a letter. However, how they spun it was that she said, well, she said Sybil, the main personality, she had been in a 2-day fugue when that letter was written. So one of the other personalities wrote it and Sybil didn't remember.
Okay.
And this other personality was apparently fighting against the therapy.
All right.
And I think they showed this in the movie too, because apparently at first the personalities, quote unquote, did not want to be integrated.
Right.
So they were fighting because a lot of them didn't know about each other.
So this statement of I don't have multiple personality disorder was actually could possibly have been given by an alternate personality.
Right.
Right.
And just saying that because she wanted to get out of therapy or she didn't want to be integrated with the other personalities or whatever. That's why this is such an awkward kind of case, like such a controversial case, because there's really no way of knowing If what I mean, because this woman was a, right. kind of, you know, emotionally unstable and stuff like that. So can you take anything she said? If she said, yeah, I don't have multiple personalities.
Yeah, you couldn't really.
You can't really like.
Yeah, you take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, because yeah. it's like, you know, she could just one of the other personalities could be saying that. Yeah. Or she could just be saying that to get out of, you know, whatever, like the next breakthrough was going to be because it was right. hard or whatever. You know, she could just be in denial.
Right.
So like I'm saying, they, you know, to their credit, they didn't hide that letter. Mm-hmm. Now, evidently, like I said, the two of them, Dr. Wilbur and Sybil, or Shirley Mason, was her real name, but I'm just going to keep calling her Sybil because it's less confusing. But they had a very, very close relationship. Now, allegedly, at some points, when Sybil was, you know, younger and she was first starting to undergo the therapy, she didn't have a job. And so Dr. Wilbur paid her rent and mm-hmm. bought her clothes and right. things like that. So, like I said, there might have been some financial, you know, some right. financial gain going on there because she didn't have another way to support herself. And I should note also that they stayed friends. Like apparently, well, now, Sybil ended up having to move out of her hometown because after the book came out, even though details had been changed, even though her name had been changed, even the names of all her alternate personalities had been changed.
People figured out who it was.
Because it right. was a small town. She was from a small town in Minnesota called Dodge Center. And, you know, they knew exactly who that book was about.
Right.
And so it was a little awkward, so she had to move away. Now, it seemed like for the rest of her life, she lived real close to Dr. Wilbur. So she'd like, you know, move closer and stuff like that. Now she did get a job later. She was, an art teacher. She taught art at a community college. And apparently she was a very good teacher, very good artist also.
Yeah. They said she had a high IQ.
Yeah. Very talented woman. But it kind of like there came a point when she got older where she couldn't, make any decisions without her doctor's input and things like that. So there might have been some kind of weird like symbiosis going on with the two of them.
Right.
Not real sure. And like I said, you know, the book and the movie proceeds were all divided three ways between the doctor, Sybil, and the author. And the kind of the weird thing too is that later on in life, Sybil actually she got breast cancer.
Yeah.
In about 1990. And she did not like doctors,
yeah.
did not like hospitals. So she denied, she said she didn't want treatment.
Wow.
So now the cancer went into remission
right.
for a while. But then a couple of years after that, Dr. Wilbur got Parkinson's disease
mm-hmm.
and Sybil moved into her house mm-hmm. to take care of her.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, so Dr. Wilbur ended up dying of Parkinson's disease and then, you know, Shirley Mason, a.k.a. Sybil, she died of breast cancer much later because she denied treatment.
Right.
And it was kind of... Now, friends of hers, when she died in 1998. And, you know, they said that she was quite happy when she'd never married. She never had children. She always kind of lived alone, kind of reclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had cats, played in her garden or whatever. And oddly, even though, you know, evidently her family's faith had been kind of a big bone of contention that they were real strict and stuff like that. She stayed a Seventh-day Adventist until she died. So, like I said, maybe not. Now, she had severed all ties with her hometown. She didn't talk to her family anymore. She didn't talk to her old friends anymore. So, you know, there might have been some shit behind that, too.
One of the weird things that struck me about this case is that there was merchandising involved, though.
Yeah.
What was that? They were trying to sell T-shirts?
Yeah, they actually, there is some evidence that the three women had started, and this was even before the book came out.
Okay.
That they had registered Sybil Incorporated.
A Sybil Incorporated.
Yeah, and that was going to be like books, movies, they were going to do like a board game, they were going to do like t-shirts.
A board game?
Yeah, which I was like, how do you make a multiple personality board game?
That's some wild shit there.
Yeah.
There's something suspicious about that.
That's what I mean.
If you ask me, there's something suspicious about that.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Now, like I said, it should be noted, like, how much of this was the doctor just being a cynical cash grabber and saying, yeah. oh, here's somebody I can mold into somebody with multiple personalities.
Right.
'Cause like I said, you know, after all this stuff about repressed memory syndrome and false memory syndrome, it's very easy, it turns out, to implant false memories into people's heads,
right.
especially if you put them like under hypnosis or you put them under the influence of some right. drug or something like that. And you keep telling them that this happened right. to them over and over. Eventually they'll remember it like it really happened. They'll even start adding details of their own.
Weird.
And that's very, very easy to do.
Yeah.
I mean, before, I think many years ago, people used to think, oh, your memory was like, you know, like a videotape. You could just play it back.
Right.
Memory is not like that at all.
Well, okay. So what do you think was really wrong with her?
Now, here's the thing. Many other there was a book that came out by Debbie Nathan, and this came out in the late 90s, I believe. It was called Sybil Exposed. And her theory was, she went through a lot of Dr. Spiegel's papers and, you know, various other things. And she kind of came to the conclusion that one, Dr. Wilbur was kind of exploiting Sybil, like kind of molding her into somebody. She thought that Sybil might have had pernicious anemia, of all things.
What?
Yeah.
What's that?
Because apparently it's some kind of blood disorder. And I guess back in the day, it used to manifest, like, the symptoms that it would present with were sometimes misidentified as, like, very psychiatric disorders. Now, according to the book Sybil Exposed, when they treated Sybil with, like, you know, liver supplements and things like that, like, she actually would get better. Like, her psychiatric symptoms would go away. Allegedly. I don't know.
Right.
I've really only read that in a couple of places.
Okay.
Like, in that one book. So, you know, whether it was anemia or whether it was something else, I tend to think, like, as I'm not a psychiatrist, I tend to think that it was some type of, could have been schizophrenia, could have just been, you know, borderline personality disorder, could have been something like that.
Right.
Because, I mean, initially the symptoms that she presented with, and I should note too that multiple personality disorder, it's not, they don't call it that anymore.
Yeah.
Since I believe the DSM-4, which I think came out in 2000, actually might have been earlier than that. They might have changed it in 1980, but they actually call it dissociative identity disorder now. And it's still a very controversial, because some psychiatrists don't even think it exists.
Right.
They think that it's, you know, that it's being confused for other things.
Hmm.
Because it's very rare to see the type of thing that was presented, at least in the film, where this woman is just like switching personalities like on a dime. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, she's in the office and she's like, oh, now I'm this person. Now I'm a baby. Now I'm this. Now I'm that. They said it's very, very, very rare.
Right.
And most of the symptoms, like I said, the most significant symptom is missing time. When you come in, you claim, hey, it's five days. I don't remember what I did the last 5 days. And, you know, but that is also a symptom of, one, schizophrenia, also borderline personality disorder. So I think nowadays, though there is no consensus, I think nowadays dissociative identity disorder is kind of seen as a subset of borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
Because some of the manifestations are the same. So I don't think people are, you know, I don't think it's like a separate diagnosis necessarily.
It's like a spectrum disorder and it can go into this realm.
Because it does seem like most of the people that are diagnosed with it, it's kind of just a handful of psychiatrists that are diagnosing these people.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's not, and there's not even really any agreed upon symptoms that are like, yeah, that's what that is. Because it's kind of a very awkward kind of thing to diagnose, you know, because it manifests in such a strange way. Hmm. And also, I think in the newest DSM, they also have something called possession trance or something like that.
Wow.
So they're kind of tying it together, like you were saying about the movies earlier.
Right, yeah.
They're kind of tying it together with people that think they're possessed by demons or think they're being taken over by other creatures or other identities.
Hmm.
And it should be noted, too, that I read this on the Wikipedia page about dissociative identity disorder. It's really long, but it's kind of interesting that some people that have presented with this alleged disorder, you know, not only do they come out with like normal people, they said most of the time, most of their identities are just other regular people.
Right.
But sometimes you get ones that are animals.
Animals.
Right. Or celebrities. Or mythological creatures or mythological people.
You said celebrities. It reminded me of that program, that program we saw last night with the guy who thought he was Madonna.
Oh, yeah. Madonna. My Strange Addiction. Yeah, we were watching My Strange Addiction last night. And that guy wanted to be Madonna.
Yeah.
And not just dress up as Madonna. He wanted to actually be Madonna. Yeah. It was kind of sad. He was all right at the end. I think he threw all his Madonna stuff away. But, so like I said, kind of, I don't like wish to, because like I said, most of the people involved are dead. The, you know, Sybil is dead.
Yeah, a lot of people are dead. You'll never really know.
And you'll never really know whether this was a real disorder or whether it was something that was just kind of, you know, finagled into that to make a particular narrative.
Yeah.
Because you have to think that, like I said, just like we talked about on the Satanic Panic show, and we talked about it a little bit on the Amityville Horror show too, it seemed like the cultural, you know, whole milieu of the time was, for some reason, everybody was super into demon possession and like being taken over by other identities. That was a very big
It was weird
fad then. And it kind of went way, you know.
Went with that.
Yes, and it went into the 80s. So I can see how this kind of identity switching type of thing would appeal to people from that time period.
I definitely think she was mentally ill.
I don't think anyone is disputing that. Right.
I think her doctors were trying to help her.
Don't think, like, I know that some journalists and some other doctors have said that maybe... Right. That there was some malicious, but I don't think that. I don't think she was.
But I do also think that it was a priority for the doctors to have this be a multiple personality case for money. And that money would also help Sybil.
Yeah.
And I think the multiple personality disorder thing that she had, from what I can tell, was intermittent. Sometimes sometimes it would get better, sometimes it would go away.
Yeah.
But, I agree with you. I think it was probably more like schizophrenia.
Yeah, it might have been.
What do they call it? Borderline or personality disorder.
Borderline personality disorder.
Yeah,
I generally do think that, I don't think Dr. Wilbur was necessarily trying to exploit her. I think she was trying to help her. But it might have been a case where here's a woman that's presenting with these kind of strange, unusual symptoms.
Right.
And... you know, multiple personality disorder at the time was very, very rarely diagnosed.
Right.
So you can see how a doctor at the time might be encouraged, maybe not even consciously.
Right.
To sort of push her in that direction.
Right.
So she could have like a kind of unusual case study.
Right.
To sort of base her career upon.
Right.
And, you know... like I said, the woman had a good career before that, but she's still, to this day, best known...
for this case.
For this case.
Right.
And I should note that also later on, she was actually instrumental in getting... I believe his name was Billy Milligan, but he was one of the first people to... the first male to get off on an insanity defense for multiple personality disorder. She was like instrumental in his defense.
Wow.
So that was like the first time of that happening. So she was kind of like the go-to person
for this,
for multiple personality disorder. And she got known for that, which, you know, you can see how especially if you're a doctor, you don't want just boring old
doctor. You want to be a celebrity doctor.
Yeah. You kind of want to be a celebrity, and you're like, here's a woman that has these weird symptoms and I can kind of push it in that direction. This is something that hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
And it's very rare. Right. You know, it's just like not like normal bipolar disorder, depression, yawn, you know what I mean?
Right.
This is sexy. She doesn't remember. She's some of her personalities. One of them was a baby. Two of them were boys.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And it was just this kind of weird, sordid.
Yeah.
And I mean, I should note, this was kind of funny. I think they went into this in the movie too, but she had two male personalities. One of them was Sid, and I can't remember the other one's name, but, they were teenage boys. And evidently, when she was one of these boys, she really thought, or she said, that when she grew up, she was going to grow a penis.
Oh,
and
really?
She would be able to put a baby in a girl. That's what one of the male personalities said.
Finally be able to pee standing up.
Yeah, I guess so. But apparently, and when I saw that, when I saw the movie, like the boy, Sid, would get really annoyed when the doctor would be like, but you're not a boy, you don't have a penis, you're not, you know, you're a girl. And he'd get really upset about that.
That's funny.
But apparently, you know, the boy was, he was a carpenter, just like her real father had been. So they were all obviously fragmented, you know, fragmented aspects of her own personality.
Right.
She was just kind of personifying them.
Right.
Or the doctor was doing it and giving them names. But, you know, like I said, it's kind of a sad case, and I feel like Sybil herself, I don't know if she's necessarily 100% the victim. But, you know, she obviously had a lot of problems. And, I mean, the doctor did help her. She did end up having, like, a relatively normal life later on. I mean, she painted. She was a teacher. She was doing stuff like that. So, you know, did it really hurt her? I doubt it.
Yeah. They did make some money off of it.
They did make some money off of it. Right. Actually, when Dr. Wilbur died, she left her $25,000 Okay. Which, you know, which was nice. And so
not a hoax. Not a hoax. It did happen. Might have been slightly a misdiagnosis. There may have been played up a little bit.
Yeah.
But still an interesting case.
And the abuse, we don't really know how much of that happened. Yeah. That might have been exaggerated.
Kind of like flushing kids down the toilet.
Yeah. Go back and listen to the Satanic Panic show. Yeah, that's actually that's still one of my favorite shows. Yeah, it's funny. I just because we lived through that and I just remember so much about it.
Yeah,
it
we have some comments on that one. You know, some guy was saying, yeah, man, I lived through it too, man. Like, I know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, people our age, we remember.
Yeah.
So, like I said, this is kind of like this is probably like why I'm so fascinated, why I've always been so fascinated with this case, because it's almost like the same thing.
Yeah.
Because I've always been fascinated.
From the same era.
I've always been fascinated with false memory syndrome.
Yeah.
And that whole thing about people being able to, because that freaks me out. It freaks me out that people could put you under hypnosis or give you a drug or something like that and then suggest all this shit and then you remember it like it really happened. That is fucking freaky.
Yeah.
Because and probably most people when they grew up, you think that your memory is like pretty good. Like, oh, I remember this happened. You just play it back in your head.
It's been proven that your memory is really bad.
It is very bad.
Yeah.
And it's reconstructive. Every time you think back to an event, you're adding and changing it.
Right.
So it's never the same.
I can remember how cool thing. I remember how cool certain toys used to look when I was a kid from back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And then if you look that up on Google to see what that toy actually looked like, it's nothing like you remember it.
No.
You're like, man, that thing's fucking lame.
Yeah. Yeah, well, everything's cool when you're a kid.
It's when you're a kid, everything's cool.
That's the only thing that sucks about, well, not the only thing, but that's one thing that sucks about getting older. It's like, nothing's cool anymore.
Go back and look at some old music videos. A lot of them don't look anything like you remember them.
Well, yeah. And that's kind of the thing, because that was my big thing when I was a kid, was because, you know, MTV started when I was 9, and I was, like, glued to it from then on.
Right.
And I still have such fond memories of all these videos, and now you can see them.
You look at them, you go,
on YouTube, and you're like, cheap looking. Wow, yeah, that looked like it was made for, like, $1.98.
Yeah, look at his hair.
Look at their hair. Wait, why did we think that was cool at the time?
Why did I think that outfit looked so cool? You look at it now, you know. Flock of seagulls and shit.
I still kind of liked his hair. I liked his hair. But
we can wrap it up.
Yeah, okay. So we're getting close to the end of the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Wasn't too rambling, I hope.
Yeah, we're going to ramble.
Well, you know, that's how we do.
These are for entertainment purposes. And just, you know, there's a lot about this case. If you're interested in it, you can go look at it.
Yeah, read the book. The book is excellent. Even if the abuse part was bullshit, it's still like pretty salacious. And
it's actually kind of hard to do a show on this because there was so much about it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is hearsay.
Yeah. And like I said, it's something like they're all dead, so you're never going to really sort it out.
You're never going to know.
Right. And you know, the character, one of the characteristics of mental illness is that it's subjective, you know.
Right.
So you're never going to know what her problem really was or whether, you know. So anyway, I guess we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up.
Okay. So it's the end of the show. So I'm going to remind you again, go to Project Entertainment Network on Patreon and give them some money and get some free stuff. It's really cool. Yeah. Also go to Zazzle.com/13o'clock and buy some of our t-shirts. Eventually I'll add more, I promise. Mm-hmm. And we'll tell you what they look like when we get ours.
Yeah. And if you're on YouTube, please share your favorite shows with some of your friends. We can get the subs up, and we got a show for everybody.
Yeah, and if you have any recommendations or shows you want us to do, because like I said, this one was a recommendation. And,
leave it in the comments, and we'll do a show. On.
Yeah, leave it in the show, and we'll do a comment. You know, if we want to, we might.
Yeah.
We're not promising anything.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We've had some good recommendations so far.
Yeah,
We're gonna get to Crowley. We're gonna get to Crowley. Don't worry.
Yeah, because that's been recommended by a couple of people, so we're gonna do that. We're going to do that. But so anyway, that will do it for this episode of 13 O'Clock.
Mm-hmm.
And please, like us on Facebook and like us on Twitter. I forgot to mention that. And that'll do it. We will see you next Tuesday.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.